everybody. It is 6 o'clock on Tuesday, July 21st. I would like to call to order the Planning Commission meeting for the City of Arroyo Grande. We have a roll call, please.
Chair Martin.
Here.
Vice Chair Shiro.
Here.
Commissioner Maravilla.
Here.
Commissioner Montes.
Here.
And Commissioner Sage.
Here.
Very good. All are present. Before I continue on, this is, as has been the habit for the last couple months, a remote meeting. And if there are people in the public that are listening in or they're listening in, they don't know, need the phone number. But I'm going to add it again just in case and put it in the public record again for tonight. People that want to make comments during the meeting on anything that's on the agenda, the phone number to call in on is 1-833-493-5844. We can now stand for the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag, United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everyone. We have a fairly light agenda this evening, but is there any desire from my fellow commissioners to revise the order of the agenda items?
No.
Okay, hearing none, I'm going to proceed. This next item is number 5. The public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on this agenda. And comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And the Brown Act does restrict the Commission from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. Do we have any people that have called in? Is there anyone out there in the public that has called in or has expressed an interest in making a comment or suggestion on an item that is not on the agenda for tonight's meeting? I'm learning that there is no one pending on that call, so we will continue on. Next item is written communications. From staff, is any other some supplemental information that is received on our agenda tonight that needs to be shared at this point?
No written communications have been received for this meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much. The next item is the consent agenda. We have 2 items on the consent agenda. Tonight, item 7A is the approval of the meeting minutes from our June 16th meeting. And 7B is a lot line adjustment, number 20-001, located at 1255 East Grand Avenue. Is there a desire to remove either one of these items? If not, I'm going to entertain a motion to approve and accept these 2 consent agenda items.
Chair Martin, Senator Montes. Oh, I'm sorry, Jamie.
No, I think you might be saying the same thing I am, so go for it.
Oh, well, I had a question regarding the lot line adjustment, so I would just like to ask that question before we make a motion.
Okay. What is your question? Is the applicant available? I don't know. Is the applicant available? Okay. The applicant is available on the phone. Hopefully you can hear what's going on. If you have a question, Andrew Perez is also available. But go ahead. Commissioner Montes, why don't you ask your question, and if that doesn't answer for Commissioner Maravilla, will allow her to ask her question and make her comment as well.
Okay. My question is related to prior staff advisory committee discussion. On the memo, it says that the staff advisory committee discussed issues related to drainage and access. And I was just looking for a little bit more information about the drainage. I did see that the applicant will need to install an easement, but my question's more focused on the drainage.
I'm wondering if staff of...
Commissioner Montes, this is Associate Planner Andrew Perez speaking.
Andrew.
With regards to the drainage question, there's just a concern because the topography of the site is kind of a low point on the southeast corner of the site. So just with regards to future development, if that were to be developed, drainage would need to be addressed on that site separately from proposed parcel number two.
Very good. Thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Maravilli, does that address your question, or do you have something else you'd like to see addressed?
No, I just wanted to make a motion to approve those items with a slight edit to the minutes. There was a typo on the minutes, so.
Okay, it's at a kind of a draft agenda anyway, so where is that? What correction would you like to see made?
It's just the numbering. The item that was pulled from the consent agenda was 7B, and it's marked as 7C. So I just wanted to make sure that was amended to 7B so there's no confusion if anyone's looking at it in the future.
Okay. Can that be notated? That's from the meeting of the...
What meeting? June 16th.
June 16th meeting. We just need to make a correct on the typo on those meeting notes. Very good. Shall be made. Okay, I will accept that. Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Maravilli and a second by Commissioner Shiro. Any other discussion on this item at all? Hearing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Maravilli?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Montes?
Yes.
Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Okay, item 8 is the public hearings. We have none agendized tonight. And then number 9 is the non-public hearing item. We have a single item under consideration tonight is the consideration of policy establishing thresholds of significance for evaluating transportation impacts under the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to SB 743. At this point, I'm going to turn over to staff for their presentation.
Thank you. Yes, this is Whitney McDonald, your Community Development Director, and I will be going through a hopefully brief little PowerPoint. For those listening on the phone, this PowerPoint can be viewed streaming online at the city's website or on channel 20. It more or less will just cover the material that is identified and discussed in more detail in our staff report and proposed policy. So as Chairperson Martin indicated, this is a discussion of a proposed policy to establish thresholds of significance for evaluating transportation impacts under the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to SB 743. So Senate Bill 743 was signed into law in 2013. It amended CEQA, and we will refer to the California Environmental Quality Act under that acronym CEQA. So SB 743 amended CEQA to change how a project's transportation impacts need to be measured. Whereas previous impacts analyses were done for transportation purposes, looking at levels of service, meaning, and we'll get into a little more details on what that means, that metric is no longer to be used for CEQA purposes in evaluating a project's potential impacts on the environment and, in particular, on transportation services. Instead, we need to look at vehicles mile traveled. That will now be our new metric, and that is effective July 1st of this year. And so the way this occurred was this law was the bill was signed into law in 2013. It required OPR, the Office of Planning and Research, to establish new guidelines that would create a new metric that is to be used to evaluate transportation impacts. OPR went ahead and did that, created new guidelines that went into effect in 2018. Those guidelines then set forth this new metric, and the metric is to be used July 1st of this year. So it gave us a little time to evaluate how we were going to implement the new guideline. So here we are. So to give you a little comparison to what we are currently, or what we're used to doing under CEQA, is using level of service as a quantitative metric to describe the operating conditions of a road. And so when we would look at a project, we would look at the extent to which that project generated traffic that would impact operations of our roads and our road segments and intersections. And so level of service, you'll see identified with the acronym LOS. And LOS is typically reported using a letter grade, like we would expect with our grades in school. So an A is the best. That's when our operational conditions are optimal. All the way down to a LOSF, which indicates a significant congestion in a segment or at an intersection. And typically, we would establish, each agency would establish a threshold for essentially what's acceptable in terms of the way our roads are operating. Is an LOSC acceptable, or maybe a D is okay in certain circumstances? Usually your LOS thresholds are probably set around that C and D level, and so projects would be evaluated looking at whether the amount of traffic they generated degraded those intersections to something worse than, say, a D. So mitigation would typically be imposed to address those impacts under CEQA. For deteriorating your LOS, and those mitigation measures typically involve roadway expansion. So essentially, if you've got a congested area, our solution is to help move those cars through that congested area quicker by expanding your roadways, expanding your intersections, and generally kind of going bigger with your transportation infrastructure. So seeing that when you evaluate projects using this as that metric, using LOS as the metric, and creating mitigation measures to address that congestion by going kind of bigger with your infrastructure, it did create a number of problems that the legislature wanted to address, and that OPR, the Office of Planning and Research, wanted to help us essentially get under handle by modifying our standards. So OPR identified a number of problems using LOS as a primary measure of transportation impacts, and some of those problems include the fact that LOS actually inhibits infill development, because you could imagine if you have a congested area with more people in it, then adding more development in a populated area is more likely to increase your traffic and increase your congestion, and so that's going to also promote more sprawl and more low density development outside of your urban areas, and as a result we would get increases in greenhouse gas emissions. Using LOS as our standard also exacerbates regional congestion. So looking at, again, if you promote development outside of your sort of urban areas, then you're going to push that development out into the more rural areas or semi-rural areas and create more of a regional sprawling congestion. There's also increased costs associated with constructing and maintaining the infrastructure that ends up being required as mitigation. And then in addition, active transportation and transit modes get more complicated because and less promoted, because we're essentially accommodating single use, single occupancy vehicle use. I would say that in looking at this list of problems with LOS, I think again the real one of the real drivers behind SB 743 is a desire to, again, look at your greenhouse gas emission goals. And so the state, in trying to reach those GHG goals, wanted to essentially look at how do we do our land use planning in a way that might look at that single occupancy vehicle use and try to encourage people to do less of that through actual land use planning. So what is VMT? So VMT stands for Vehicle Miles Traveled, and it is, again, our new metric we need to use when looking at transportation impacts under CEQA. VMT measures the number and length of vehicle trips made on a daily basis. It estimates trips broken down by purpose, so such as a commute trip, a delivery trip, shopping, and other types of errands, going to school, things like that. Regional demand models, household travel surveys, and other large data sources are what we use to estimate vehicle miles traveled that a project would generate. And again, we look at those larger data sources because we're trying to make sure that we're capturing the full scope of somebody's potential trips that they might make based on their daily activities. So a number of benefits of using vehicle miles traveled as a metric as opposed to LOS. One is that it kind of gives us a bit of the opposite of what we saw with the LOS standard. It encourages infill development close to key destination services and transportation options. And it does this because if you think about it, if you are encouraging additional infill development, your infill development of a site within an already largely built out area is going to essentially draw people who are probably within the same area already rather than, and so they will be traveling less vehicle miles to get to that location as opposed to, say, developing something outside of an already established city or village area and then drawing trips out to that area to service whatever use it might be. VMT also incentivizes projects that address jobs housing imbalances. So again, if you have a project that includes housing and essentially addresses that ability of a community to provide both the kinds of jobs that are necessary to support the full range of income levels, as well as the housing to match those jobs, then again, you're going to be having less traveling by those single occupancy vehicles, and you'll have a lower vehicle miles traveled overall. There's also less costs associated with roadway expansion and widening because, again, you're not going to be triggering those requirements through CEQA to look at expanding and widening your roadways as a mitigation measure. And again, VMT reductions are also needed to achieve our statewide long-term GHG reduction goals. And that's, again, a really big motivator behind this shift that's occurring statewide. So what we're doing today is looking at establishing thresholds of significance that we will be able to use for evaluating projects under CEQA in the future. And what a threshold of significance is it essentially determines at what level do we think that impacts to the environment from a project are significant. CEQA gives lead agencies, meaning in this instance the city, leeway to establish their own thresholds of significance to determine whether an impact, you know, is actually going to be significant to the environment or not. Those thresholds can be essentially ad hoc on a case-by-case basis, but if they're established in a policy, then it creates additional defensibility for all the evaluation that's done under CEQA using that threshold. That's because we're required when we create this threshold to have substantial evidence supporting it. And once we've created the threshold based on substantial evidence, it then makes that threshold less challengeable in every project or with every project that uses that threshold. So here, the city contracted with GHD to help us develop a proposed threshold of significance that would comply with SB 743. GHD prepared an analysis of our VMT patterns in our city and regionally and developed baseline VMT numbers for us to incorporate into our proposed policy. And those baseline VMT numbers are important because when we look at a project under CEQA, we have to determine the extent to which impacts from the project above the existing environmental conditions, which is called the baseline, could create a significant impact to the environment. And you'll see as we get through the thresholds we're proposing here, the baseline numbers help us establish on a quantified basis when a project's going to be significant or create a significant impact. So here our baseline VMT was calculated using the travel demand model that was developed by the San Luis Obispo County Council of Governments, or SLOCOG. Their model and the way that we've used the model and proposed it in the policy that's presented to you today represents a countywide average that's based on full trips and not limited by jurisdictional boundaries. And I think this is particularly important in our area, given that we are so close to Santa Maria, which is a different county, but people do come from Santa Maria to Rio Grande, both for work and for pleasure and for visiting and shopping. So here are baseline VMT numbers once we put them through the SLOCOG model. Gave us a VMT per capita in some instances and per employee in others, we'll see. For residential projects, we're looking at a baseline VMT of 20.2 vehicle miles traveled per capita. And for employees, we're looking at 14.0 vehicles mile traveled. And that's our baseline. So we will then use that, as we'll see, as essentially the bottom line number to determine if a project creates vehicle miles traveled above a certain threshold, then they may be considered significant. So OPR released a technical advisory that gave, it essentially expanded on the guidelines that were adopted in 2018 to give everybody a little bit more of an understanding of how to best go about creating our own thresholds and establishing ways that we could apply this new metric under CEQA. And their technical advisory memo recommended that 15% reduction in VMT should be a target for our significance threshold. In other words, if a project creates more than 15% below our current baseline number, then they could be considered to have a potentially significant impact on transportation. So our policy provides some numbers, so basically taking the baseline number and reducing that by 15%. So for residential projects, we're looking at a 17.2 per capita threshold of significance. For projects that involve employees, we're looking at 11.9 employees vehicle miles traveled per employee as a potential significance criteria. And then for retail projects, this is again something that's recommended by OPR. We won't be looking at the 15% reduction below the baseline. Instead, the threshold of significance is proposed to be a net increase in overall regional VMT. So in other words, if your retail project or another another form of infrastructure project. I got ahead of myself. Then you would not create a significant impact to transportation if you're not increasing our overall regional VMT. So we're not imposing a 15% reduction threshold. And again, this is fairly common. It's been recommended by OPR, and it's been commonly adopted by other agencies as their threshold as well. For transportation projects, we're suggesting that we do a case-by-case, impose a case-by-case threshold, looking at first whether the transportation project is likely to increase auto capacity or increase vehicle miles traveled. And if we think that might be the case, then we would determine an appropriate threshold of significance to that project based on case-by-case kind of criteria and what seems to work best. Mixed-use projects, because we, you know, anticipate you've got both regional, residential component and perhaps office, or perhaps it's retail, or it's some other kind of use, or it's a mixed-use project that includes some retail, some office space. OPR is recommending that each land use within that project be analyzed separately and evaluated against that corresponding threshold. So in addition to providing these thresholds and the numerical baseline with the 15% below number, we are proposing to include some screening criteria. And this, again, is based on guidance from OPR and their advisory memo. And so we've identified a number of projects that OPR has essentially evaluated and thought through and determined that these types of projects are unlikely to create potentially significant transportation impacts. And so if they fall under these criteria, they can be screened out and they are not required to do an actual quantitative analysis of their VMT. So these projects would include projects that are consistent with a sustainable community strategy or the general plan, and that generate less than 110 daily trips. Projects that are within a half a mile of a transit stop, and retail projects that are local serving. And in general, OPR is suggesting that projects that are less than 50,000 square feet could be considered to be local serving. There are some exceptions to that that essentially require us to kind of make sure that it, even though you are a retail project of less than 50,000 square feet, if there's something peculiar about the type of retail you're providing, then we would be required to look at that to see if you truly are a project that is unlikely to generate potentially significant vehicle miles traveled transportation impacts. So finally, I think a lot of people are probably wondering what this means for projects if a potentially significant transportation impact is found using this new VMT metric. We have not included mitigation strategies in the proposed policy, and that's largely because we wanted to make sure we had a really ultimate flexibility to consider and potentially impose measures depending on the type of project. And honestly, based on measures that come up in the future, this is a new metric. It's a new world in some ways, and people are still working through lots of different options and ideas for how projects can appropriately mitigate for potentially significant VMT. And so we wanted to make sure that we gave ourselves the same kind of flexibility that others will need to use. But we wanted to provide kind of a list of ideas that we would certainly keep in mind and potentially use just depending on what's shown to be effective, what's shown to be feasible, and what seems to be appropriate given a particular project. And so some possible methods of mitigation that have been discussed include improving or increasing access to transit, incorporating a mix of land uses to increase access to frequently needed goods and services. One option is locating the project in a lower VMT area of the city or the region. Now, that obviously would change the nature of our project quite a lot, but it depends on the project itself that we're looking at, and perhaps that's something VMT analysis in that situation could drive really where a project would occur. Another option would be to look at providing car, bike, and ride-sharing programs, and possibly participating in an in-lieu fee program to fund citywide improvements to sustainable transportation modes. And I'm sure folks are probably wondering what happens to our level of service analysis that we have done in the past, and where does it go from here? It's no longer to be used as a tool for evaluating impacts for CEQA purposes, meaning degradation in the level of service is not going to create an environmental impact. However, a city's general plan still includes policies and standards for helping to ensure that projects don't create an undue burden on our infrastructure. And so we are proposing to retain LOS as a tool for evaluating a project's consistency with the city's general plan. So a project-level LOS analysis would still be required consistent with our existing traffic impact analysis report guidelines, as well as our general plan. And this would mean that projects generating greater than 20 peak hour trips would require this further traffic analysis to help us provide decision makers with information about the project's consistency with our general plan. This would also include an analysis of roadway safety, intersection queuing, and multimodal transportation. And I'm sure this will help us ensure that we're doing appropriate planning for our infrastructure into the future, that projects that come in that may create an impact to our infrastructure are essentially required to or could be required to mitigate that through some form of condition. But this mitigation, again, would not be required because of an environmental impact. Instead, it would be required in order to help our decision makers find the project to be consistent with our general plan. So that kind of gives you our overview of the proposed policy. We're bringing this to you as a Planning Commission to really get your feedback and recommendations to answer any questions. We know you see our CEQA analyses on projects, and you're going to be seeing VMT analyses come before you. And so talking through any questions you might have about what this means, questions about the thresholds we're suggesting will be really helpful for us, as well as I think for your commission as we see projects come forward. And it will also be really helpful for our city council. We are asking for a recommendation from your commission on the policy. If there are any changes you think we should make or look at, we would certainly consider that and bring that forward to the city council. Ultimately, we propose that the policy be presented and then ultimately adopted by the city council by resolution. And once that happens, we will have it available to apply to any new projects that come forward that require a transportation analysis under CEQA. And with that, I would also like to mention we do have our consultants from GHD available by on the call along with everybody else to answer questions. And so if we need to get into, or if you'd like questions about how this actually works, or how the baseline numbers were developed, we have Jake Hudson on the line from GHD. We may also have Todd Tregenza, although I Yes, we do. We also have Todd Tregenza from GHD available, and our city engineer, who's been helping us develop that policy as well. So with that, we're open to questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask each of the commissioners individually to pose any kind of questions or comments that they may have for staff. And when they're doing that, if you just share that you, if you have any kind of questions for the GHD consultants, we'll allow for that after we allow staff to get, you know, through the questions and issues and comments. I'm going to start with Commissioner Sage. Mr. Sage, do you have any kind of questions for staff or comments that you would like to make on these proposed changes?
Yes, Chair Markman, I do. And let me start with, if I will, the slide presentation here. Could we go back to the side page, which is thresholds of significance? And under that particular slide, I have a question about the retail projects, where it states impacts are significant if the project DMT results in a total net increase of the regional DMT. So my question is, which regional DMT are we referring to, the resident or the work?
So I think this is a Whitney McDonald. I will try to answer that, and then hopefully if I've made a mistake, our consultants will clarify that as well. I believe by regional VMT there, we would be looking at an overall average of vehicle miles traveled in our region when the project comes in. And so it kind of gives us the ability to look at what that average is. And it doesn't necessarily limit it to those baseline numbers that are identified in the slide before. Is that correct, Jake?
Okay. Yeah. Well, first, can you guys hear me? I haven't spoken yet.
Yes. Please introduce yourself, just so we all know.
Okay. Yeah. So I Jake Hudson, again with GHD. No, that is correct. You're looking at the total overall change in VMT. It's just a really good example to sort of visualize why retail and is a little bit different. Is if you can imagine a residential development and they're traveling to a grocery store all the way across town. If you have another grocery store that is built closer to them, those trips are still occurring. The lengths are just much shorter, and so what you're looking at instead of the overall average is because those trips are already occurring, you're looking just at the net overall change of the originating trip.
Okay, thank you. And this is Glenn Martin. I just as a kind of a point of clarification for Mr. Sage. The VMT numbers for residential use as well as the VMT numbers for office use or commuting use, employee use, and these regional VMTs, these are different numbers. So it's not like the retail projects are going to assume or accept or use a household number. These are all averages or numbers.
Retail, number specific for retail.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. My next question is, when I was looking at actually the GHD report, there's considerations section on page 27. They provide a good logical explanation of why we would want to use the countywide work VMP instead of our local AG VMT, but I don't, I didn't see any explanation as to why we would want to
you know, on a regional level, for a county level, you essentially have this overall average, and within your cities, the incorporated cities are your higher efficiency area VMT production zones. So the overall intent is essentially to focus development within those higher efficiency VMT areas. That's what's actually recommended by OPR. When you look at the city and you start comparing the city to itself, what'll happen is the downtown core, the village area, will essentially it'll create a baseline VMT average that's so restrictive that any development outside of that area just isn't able to meet your average threshold of significance. And so what you'll find when you use a city average, when you're comparing the city to itself, an already high efficiency area, you're setting the bar too high. What we find is that it's just too difficult for projects to mitigate, and you'll be finding most projects will have a class one significant impact unless they're within those downtown core areas.
Okay, well, thank you. That's a very good explanation of and does address my question. One of the other questions I have is it going to be possible to bank VMTs from project to project in order to support future projects?
Yeah, you know, this is a discussion that a lot of people are having. Every agency that we've been working with VMT and not just GHD has had the discussion about a banking or exchange program that's very similar to air quality cap and trade program, for those that are familiar with that. Essentially, you have a threshold. Anybody that's above that threat, or let me use the inverse of that. You have a threshold, and say someone is well below that threshold, they can put how much they're below the threshold as credits on a market, and then people that are above that threshold can essentially purchase those credits. So effectively what you're doing is you're looking at those two projects as a whole, and combined together, they're actually below the threshold. What's challenging is that for what we're looking at, this really is a regional metric. And typically, even with the cap and trade programs, it requires a regional body, the state, for example, for the cap and trade, or even a local regional like SOCOG or things like that to develop an exchange or banking program in cooperation with all of the other agencies. This is going to be particularly important for development that's out in the county that is very rural, and they have no means of essentially mitigating a VMT other than exchanging projects in high efficiency VMT areas and purchasing that as a credit. So that's definitely on the horizon. I think because we're seeing these already being developed at the city standpoint, those programs, there's not a lot of movement on those programs. The theory has definitely been posed. SLOCOG right now has a presentation on VMT SB 743, and they are asking the question to local agencies if they're interested in SLOCOG potentially developing such a VMT banking program.
Great. That sounds great. Okay. And then my, fourth and final question is, and this is for staff, and it's sort of a issue of what happens when we're addressing a project, addressing LOS, and also addressing VMT, and there's a conflict that we can address the LOS issue satisfactorily, but it has a negative impact on our
I think that we, no matter what, we have to do the VMT analysis under CEQA to determine whether we have a potentially significant environmental impact related to transportation. This is part of why the analysis, it's important to do them all together at the same time. As part of your CEQA document, we are required to look at general plan consistency as a section, or land use planning as a section. And what that often entails is looking at our general plan policies to see if the project is consistent with those policies. An inconsistency with our general plan policies is not an environmental impact in itself, but we cannot approve a project that is inconsistent with our general plan. And so in order to make a project or help a project be consistent with a general plan policy or requirement, they're most likely going to need to include or incorporate some changes to it. This may be in the form of a condition. And so doing the LOS analysis as part of our general plan consistency analysis will give us the idea of what kinds of potential infrastructure improvements might be needed to address impacts to our infrastructure. And if we are looking at those improvements, what kinds of impact, then those needed improvements essentially become kind of part of the project as a whole. And so those needed improvements then get worked into the VMT analysis. And I think one of the beauties of having both tools here is that with our LOS analysis, we may be able to find other measures besides, say, road widening to help address an inconsistency that will perhaps satisfy both. It could help make maybe it'll reduce trip counts, or, the VMT might go down because there's some form of transportation demand management that's going to be put into place to help address a VMT impact. So the two, I see them complementing each other quite well. I think we will be able to have, honestly, a little bit more flexibility between the two different metrics in coming up with solutions to our transportation impacts, again, with that overall goal of reducing those vehicle miles traveled and reducing our greenhouse gas emissions overall. So I think the answer is one wouldn't really trump the other because both apply. We need to make sure that a project is consistent with the general plan, but then that's really going to help inform our CEQA and transportation analysis looking at VMT as well. So hopefully the two will work out really nicely. At least that's my goal. I'm going to try to go with that optimism. Got to find it where you can.
Well, that sounds to me like both of our planners are going to have an awful lot of work to do over this next year or two. So, Andrew and Patrick, hang on. You're going to have a lot of fun. I think that is the end of my questions. I thank you very much for the responses.
Thank you, Mr. Sage. Commissioner Montez, you have questions for staff or the consultant?
Yeah, I believe I have a question for staff. And Commissioner Sage, thanks for those great questions and getting the discussion started. My question's related to this proposed policy establishing the thresholds. Does it apply to projects that have already been approved but maybe haven't begun? For example, the Halcyon Road complete street plan, would this policy apply to that project?
So I think the policy would apply to any new CEQA document, essentially. So any project that requires a CEQA analysis from here on will need to be use VMT as that metric of evaluating potential impacts under CEQA. And so if, for instance, the Housing and Complete Streets Plan didn't have a CEQA document completed to evaluate its potential impacts, and if one does need to still be completed, then it would need to use VMT as that metric for evaluating impacts. So hopefully that helps.
Yes, that does. Thank you. That's my only question.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Maravilia, you have questions?
Just one, actually. But thank you guys very much for this thorough report, especially the slideshow that we went through. It helped really clarify things for me, so I really do appreciate that. My question is just for, I guess it would be GHD, and as to how, like, the baseline numbers were established, I would be interested in learning more about that.
Sure. Yeah, this is Jake again with GHD. So the baseline numbers were developed using the regional travel demand model, as well as other census data sources. We looked at household or longitudinal employer household data, essentially to validate and calibrate the model. So that's, you know, that's essentially how we've used it. That's the same regional model that's used by it's the SLOCOG travel demand model, and it's the standard model that's used across the county when there's not a sub area model that's developed. We've looked typically what we do is we look at averages that are based off of different as we look at as a total of the entire geography or entire region, or we look at an average of a sub-region. So for example, sometimes we look at the entire county including incorporated areas, or we'll look at the county average excluding incorporated areas, or we'll look at just all the incorporated areas. So we've looked at all those different scenarios, and the one that aligned best with the city's development patterns and that's most consistent with the regional travel demand model is the countywide average, including incorporated cities.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Maravilia, any other questions?
No, we've had such great questions from our other commissioners. I really appreciate the discussion.
Yeah, it
Nothing
has been
else
good.
For me.
Yep. Commissioner Shiro, do you have questions or comments you'd like to make at this point?
Yes, I have two. This is Commissioner Shiro. Can a project be denied because of poor LOS that has VMT that has no issues? Would that still be in the purview of the Planning Commission or the City Council?
That's a good question, and I think yes. So where that would come into play is if a project created quite a significant impact that is inconsistent with the LOS identified in our general plan, meaning in our circulation element, then the project could potentially be denied because it would be inconsistent with that general plan policy. And so that's where the LOS could come into play as a means to deny a project. Now that, you know, mitigation measures, gosh, I'm really used to saying it that way, conditions could be put into place to help the project address those LOS issues and deficiencies or problems that could support a finding of consistency, even if there is potentially an impact that would exceed that LOS level identified in the general plan. But at the end of the day, if, say, the project, you know, maybe there are measures that could be put in place, but maybe an applicant refuses to do them or threatens to sue if we impose them, or maybe they're just infeasible. Maybe they're so large or infeasible that we can't find it to be consistent, that could, in theory, become a reason to deny.
Okay. And has anyone looked at just the cost from both the city's staffing standpoint of how much more work this will be per project, and also from the developer standpoint, how much more they're going to be paying for the evaluations of their projects?
We have not done an analysis to determine how much extra time or cost would be involved. I will say, however, that we have seen projects provide VMT analyses along with their traffic impact analysis reports. So, for instance, the Orchard Senior Care Facility that was before your commission last month, their traffic consultant did prepare a VMT analysis as part of that report, and that was largely because we knew the timing of that project could implicate this policy and the timing of when the new guideline went into effect on July 1st. And so we recommended that they include that analysis. I don't believe that it took a significant amount of time or extra cost, but we didn't pay that cost ourselves, so I'm not quite sure how much it did cost them. We do have our consultant on the line, though, who might be able to provide a little bit more kind of generalized information about what they're seeing, because I know they have quite a lot of experience in preparing these kinds of analyses.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, what we've typically seen is that the VMT analysis on its own is somewhere in the range of about 10% of what a typical level of service analysis costs. Again, you know, that's going to change depending on the economy of scale and other things, but that it's substantially less than a full analysis. Where we see the higher costs, particularly for the applicant, is depending on where the mitigation comes into effect. And also that could end up on the city side. If an applicant decides to use programmatic mitigation measures, such as implementing a car share program or something that has to actively be done over the course of the entitlement, that takes costs for the applicant to actually implement that measure, and that also has a cost for the city to ensure that those mitigation measures are being implemented in a monitoring program. You can see the costs really go high depending on what the mitigation measure side, depending on what that is. But the actual studies themselves are relatively inexpensive.
Got it. Thank you. I guess one more question. It's popped in my head since you've been speaking, and was kind of mentioned in your comments. But just thinking about, you know, the ramifications of and what's going, how this is going to change things, and it's unnecessarily affects our city directly, but certainly indirectly. So for developments, like let's say in the county, that would any kind of significant development, like let's say out by Lake Lopez, just 8 miles as far out there as we get, you know, here, a development like that would be significantly more difficult to get through this standard VMT versus LLS. Is that correct?
Yeah, so each agency has the authority to adopt their own thresholds of significance. The county, and Todd, you can, asking Todd from GHD, has the county completed their adoption with their threshold?
No, Jake, they haven't, but similarly looking at 15% as a threshold.
Okay. But the geography that's being evaluated may be different. What they ultimately adopt, as
I spoke of earlier, they may adopt a different geography for what's being used to establish the baseline. So I guess the answer to your question is yes, projects out in the county will likely generate a higher VMT because of the rural nature. However, the county may also adopt a different baseline geography, not the 15% below the baseline, but they may adopt a different baseline than the city does. That's a little bit more forgiving.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Very good. I just have a couple, and it goes back to what GHD said just a few minutes ago. I'm assuming that these metrics have been created and adopted and kind of spread out over the state over the past several years. But is there an expectation or a time frame to review and perhaps revise, you know, some of these averages? For me, what I call, you know, we're a small town in a relatively small county. But in order to have these numbers be meaningful for, you know, projects and developers, I can easily imagine at some point in time, 2-3 years out, depending on the number of projects that we see, of wanting to adjust or revise these, whether they go up or go down, I don't know. But just to make them a little more realistic with, you know, the history that we're seeing and with projects. That's kind of half a question.
And actually, within OPR, there is direction for how often the baseline needs to be reset, and that's every time that your regional model is updated, which is approximately five years. Your baselines are reset, and that's an opportunity to come back and revisit the methodologies and standards, and certainly the that's something that can be revisited as part of resolution. I'm sorry.
You know, very good. I think that's probably the only recommendation or addition that I would make to City Council to make sure that doesn't get lost, because I can imagine the county or SLOCOG coming through some kind of revision, you know, 5 or 6 years downstream, and I want to make sure that we're conscious of those changes and reflecting the changes we need to make locally at that point in time. The other question I really have is, this talks about incentivizing developers, and I'm wondering what happens when, if our baseline is X number and this, you know, projected goal or ideal goal is a 15% reduction, what happens when something comes in that's 10% or 5%? And here again, we're a small town with limited, you know, resources, but has there been conversations or any kind of plans about how are we incentivizing these developers that are either meeting or exceeding some of these numbers?
I think the goal of the switch and the change coming from the state and OPR is really to incentivize that work in the planning process, so that incentivizing comes in when the VMT analysis shows that maybe they are close to that threshold. But perhaps if they made some modifications to their project, that VMT number would go down based on some components of perhaps the way that the development is spread out. So let's say if it's a mixed-use project, maybe they need to shift their residence, the number of residential units versus the space for their retail or office space. Maybe they need to look at a different kind of complementary use that would go along with residential units. So in terms of incentivizing, I think that's where the intent comes in, along with location. I mean, that's honestly a huge part of it, is trying to get development to look closer to your employment centers and your healthcare centers and really where all your services are, to avoid incentivizing additional vehicle miles being traveled every day. But in terms of programs, perhaps, that's kind of where I think we'll see a lot more of that work happening in the, you know, coming years as this new approach really hits the ground running and people come up with new options. That's part of why we wanted to leave that level of flexibility in the policy itself, so that we can take whatever seems to be working in other jurisdictions, or perhaps the project applicant has some ideas, or you know, we can get more creative with the kinds of measures that might actually work. And then I don't know, I'll just leave it to also Jake and Todd, because they have been working with agencies throughout the state on this exact issue to see if there's anything else they might want to add about those kinds of incentives and how that might work in this city.
Okay, Jake, before you address that, for me, this is Glenn Martin speaking again. The when I hear the term incentive, I generally, my first thought is financial, whether that's a penalty or a rebate. You know, gee, your goal is 15%, you're at 25%, we're going to reduce your fees by X number of dollars. I think of financial. What I'm hearing you say is it's more of a design incentive where you're going to be focusing on seeking compliance through design modification rather than a financial incentive. And that makes sense to me. But I'm curious if there are other jurisdictions within the state, probably primarily larger cities, that either GHD is aware of or has worked with that has addressed this issue.
Yeah, so for incentivization, you're exactly right. It's not a monetary incentivization. What it specifically is you're incentivizing a particular type of development pattern. So right now, level of service, as Whitney indicated, just in its nature, incentivizes development to be pushed further out and more sprawl because the roads are less crowded, they're less likely to have an impact. So by changing to VMP, the areas that already have very low VMP, that are very efficient in the mix of those uses, the nature of the metric will incentivize infill development, because they'll no longer be required under the VMP metric, they'll no longer have the significant impacts that will likely require significant infrastructure investments.
Very good. Thank you. That's very helpful.
This is Todd. The only thing I would add to that is that if we want to look at possible, you know, financial angle to that incentive, the fee program, which is kind of a separate discussion, could bring in elements of VMP efficiency of a project into establishing fee amounts and things like that, which is something we're hoping to get started working with the city in short order as well.
Thank you very much. I, for one, recognize that here again, we're a small city with limited either resources, but also limited flexibility just because of the nature of the size and the scope and the type of projects that we see. If there are any more questions, even though this is not a public hearing item, I am going to open it up for anybody from the public that may have a question for either staff or the developer. You know, LOS has been a flashpoint of interest, I think is probably a very polite way of putting it, on a number of projects over the years, and I don't want to miss out on the opportunity. If there is someone in the community that is listening that would like to speak up or have a question for either staff or the consultants that are here, now's the time to do that. My request is that you do introduce yourself and limit your questions or comments to 3 minutes. We're in an unusual layout here because everything is remote, and I am willing to allow for some flexibility along that line, but let's proceed in that manner. Do we have anybody on the line that is interested in posing a question or making a comment?
No, Chair Martin, we do not have anyone from the public on the line at the moment, but we do have a couple of consultants on the phone in case they wanted to interject with any public comment.
Okay. perhaps I ought to just give the opportunity if any of the consultants are sitting out there that believe it might be this is an appropriate time to add any comments before we go back into our deliberations. Now would be an appropriate time to do that. So if there's someone who would like to speak up, I invite you to do so now. Hearing none. Brave souls out there, I don't need to add any more to the conversation. Thank you very much. This has been very illuminating, I think, for all of us, you know, given the method by which we're receiving this information. I do appreciate the staff presentation, and hopefully we've all learned a little bit more about both VMT as well as LOS in the process that we have here before us. Let me see if I can get back to my agenda. I'm going to make the motion, and then we'll open up for final comments on the members of the commission before I seek a vote. But I move that the Planning Commission accept the modifications to the transportation impacts under CEQA through the establishment of the thresholds of significance pursuant to SB 743 and recommend City Council adopt these policy changes. Is that accurate or thorough enough?
I think so. One question I would have is, Chair Martin, you mentioned possibly adding to the policy that review of the baseline numbers at that, you know, five-year increment.
Correct.
Or consistent with OPR's recommendation.
And I don't know how to word that. Perhaps, you know, make sure that the our local ordinance or compliance is remains current with, you know, the regional or statewide revisions, you know, as adopted. You know, by whether, you know, I'm not sure who the agency is, probably SLOCOG here regionally, but, you know, both regional and statewide changes are made that our changes remain current and our policies remain current with those. Is there a second?
This is Commissioner Montez. I second that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other comments? Let me just I'll introduce each, allow each of you to do that individually and see if there are any other final comments before I call for a roll call vote. Commissioner Sage, do you have any other comments you'd like to add at this point? Okay. You didn't come through there. I believe you said, no, I don't. I'm just going to take it at that level. Commissioner Maravilla, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
I'm actually excited to see how this may change things for, you know, reasons of encouraging this and infill and development and decreasing, you know, our gas emissions. I think this could be a very positive change for many reasons. So I'm excited to see it move forward.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner Montez?
No, just thank you to everyone involved. Thanks for the presentation, and thanks to GHD for your help and your explanation.
And Commissioner Shiro, any comments from you at this time?
I do. Echoing Commissioner Maravilla's comments, I'm excited as well. I'm a longtime development history, and I saw kind of in the old days when my dad was developing how these things would happen, and sometimes communities and little county areas would spring up 10 and 20 miles from a city center, but really the commercial wouldn't fill in for 10, 15 years, so lots of travel going on, and I think, you know, to see some of the newer developments and how they're planned with everything there, and having lived in the village and had the, for the first time really in my life, had the ability to almost not need a car, and it's such a cool thing. And I know that, you know, the other side of that coin is that, you know, people, oh, it'll be too many people and it'll be too dense. And but I flash back on our last city manager Bergman when he first brought it to people's attention in a budget meeting that, you know, one of the reasons why we're in the budget crisis that we are is that it costs so much to keep up roads, and God knows that we've dealt with roads in the last just couple of months with the money that it needs. And this is one of those things that maybe if it was in place years and years and years ago, that we wouldn't be in quite the need that we have for the expanse of roads that we have. So I'm excited about it. I do have, anytime it's something new, it's like, well, how's it actually going to be applied and what's it really going to mean? And we probably don't really know that until we kind of get into the weeds and start just thrashing through projects and applying the principles. But I think the idea is sound, and I think, for the future of our environment and the future of our area, that I think, and for development as well, I think it's a positive. I think the idea that we're going to plan this out first, that like Commissioner or Chair Martin said, this is in the design side that we're really incentivizing people to think through the whole thing in an area first, and I think that's a great thing. So those are my comments.
Very good. Those are great comments as well. Thank you very much. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Montes?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Sage?
Yeah.
And Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
And that recommendation motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is item number 10, the Notice of Administrative Decisions. Since our past meeting, there are four that are listed here. Are there just any kind of questions from the commissioners to staff on any one of these four items? Feel free to speak up. I'm hearing none. There's no action that we need to be taking on this. It's just a notification that these are decisions that are being made on modest residential, just developments and permits and things like that going on in the city. Okay, we're getting near the end here on commission communications as we come to the end of the meeting. Commissioner Shiro, do you have any comments that you would like to make before we close the meeting tonight?
I do. I would just like to personally thank the staff for doing everything that they can within their power to facilitate outdoor business and outdoor dining in our city. And from just about every level of staff and every level of council and government, this town has been by far the absolute just leader in helping our businesses to survive. And I just want to personally thank them. Whitney McDonald and Bill Robeson have been great. And I just I can't tell you how much it means to me for their help.
Very good. Commissioner Sage?
I have no comment.
Okay. Commissioner Montes? Commissioner Maravilla, any comments?
None for me, thank you. None for me either, thank you.
Very good. I think the only comment I'm going to make is that as we continue to muddle our way through with this, having to deal with these remote meetings, it's nice. I am sitting here in council chambers with staff, which allows, I think, to allow this to progress with some smoothness, but I appreciate their efforts as well as the participation of the commissioners and the community. Encourage the community to listen in, and if they have a comment, take the opportunity to speak up, because the city and the commissions, and I'm sure city council, are making every effort to continue to include, the community in this process, as difficult as it is. And those are the end of my any kind of comments I have. Does staff have any kind of communications at this point?
I think I may just take an opportunity here as well. This is Whitney McDonald for anyone who's listening, to kind of echo a little bit of what we heard from Commissioner Shiro. Thank you very much, by the way, for that public thanks. It means a lot, I think, as public employees. We don't always hear that very often, and so we take it where we can get it and kind of stow it away for the next day where we might need to remember that that time we got a compliment, and so thank you for that. But I also wanted to, for anybody who's listening, who has a business, who needs some assistance in helping to accommodate the state's orders that are constantly changing and being updated just every week, sometimes every day, or even multiple times a day. We know it's hard to keep up. It's hard for us, too, as well. We're constantly shifting and trying to get the best guidance we can get from both the state and the county. The county has really been very instrumental in helping us help our businesses determine what they need to do to comply with what's been happening in response to COVID-19. But if there are things that you need, if there are operational changes you're looking at, if you need to move your dining or other kinds of businesses outdoors, and you need some additional space, if you're looking at possibly sidewalk usage or some other use of city right-of-way, or you just need to move your operations outdoors into a parking lot, please come to us at the city and the Community Development Department. We have a streamlined application process, and we are waiving fees for those applications, so we are here to help as much as we possibly can, and so let us help you in whatever way you need. So I think that's it from me. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. That is the end of our agenda. My clock says 7:22 p.m. This meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.